Governor Jerry Brown has his hands full running California. There's a 10% unemployment rate and a $10 billion budget deficit. This fall, the governor will be asking voters to pass an initiative that would raise taxes on people making more than $250,000. But passage isn't assured. 30 years ago, the state spent 3% of its general fund dollars on corrections and prisons. Today, it spends more than 11%. That's $10 billion running the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. In 2011, the state's 33 prisons were at nearly 200% capacity. The federal courts have since stepped in and ordered California to reduce its overcrowded prisons by more than 30,000 people. Enter Matthew Cate, the Secretary of the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. Governor Brown has turned to Cate to help push through what Brown calls a realignment of the state's corrections policies, essentially moving non-serious, non-violent felons out of the state's prisons and into county jails. But how will all of these changes impact public safety in our state? KALW's Nancy Mullane sat down with Secretary Cate to find out more about the man overseeing the policies and politics of one of the largest prison systems in the world. Cate says he used to be a law enforcement conservative. She asked him what that means.
Well, I would say that my viewpoint was that the best approach to dealing with crime in society was maximum enforcement and maximum punishment and incapacitating people who were going to prey on our citizens. And I didn't really have a very strong viewpoint on rehabilitation, for example. My focus was on the incapacitation, punishment, and victims' rights.
So have you changed?
Yeah, I would say that probably my thinking on the subject has really just grown and expanded as opposed to changed. There's still a part that where I think I was right and still right, that there are people out there who are such vicious predators that we really need to incapacitate them to protect our society. On the other hand, as I moved from prosecutor to inspector general and I began to see the conditions of the prisons and I began to understand what was going on inside them, that started to tilt my thinking a little bit. And as I learned that 95% of inmates are going to return to society, with still kind of a law and order approach, you realize that you need to do everything you can to rehabilitate those people if they're coming back. And so then as the Secretary of Corrections, that became one of my primary focuses.
As, you know, as head of the largest, really the largest prison system in the world, because there is no other country that has as many people incarcerated as the United States, and there is no other state that has as many people incarcerated as California. So what kind of responsibility do you feel running this enormous institution?
Well, first, let me make one small comment on that. We are no longer the largest state in the country. Between October and now, we've dropped 22,000 population, and we're now second behind Texas. So I say that with some pride. But nonetheless, the responsibility is still the same. It really is, a serious concern for, I think, for all citizens as to how we handle these people. I obviously focus most of my time at the 30,000-foot level. What policies should we be implementing? How to best, most effectively, efficiently hold our folks as far as security goes and on rehabilitation issues? All those things are very weighty issues. But that has to be colored by conversations with individual officers on their daily work and individual inmates on their life and their views, family members of inmates, family members of people who have been victimized, those kinds of things, because I think that gives you a more kind of full color of what the system needs.
When Governor Schwarzenegger brought in AB 900 and signed it into law, one of the things that it was bringing back was rehabilitation, and he brought in, it was a $7.7 billion program. But in the end, the rehabilitation didn't quite come through. So what is that like when you are expected to run an institution of 33 prisons and other programs throughout the state when, you know, you don't really have everything that you are supposed to have, when you don't have the funds, you don't have the programs?
Well, you have to, you know, as the old saying goes, you have to make a lot of lemonade if you can out of those lemons. The Governor Schwarzenegger did the right thing, I think, by investing in rehabilitation, and his heart was in that. He believed in rehabilitation. Maybe it was a European upbringing where they were focused on reuniting people back to their communities. And so he put the money in it initially in those early years of his time as governor. But I don't think it was – the department was ready. And what I mean by that is we weren't yet assessing what we call criminogenic needs, for example. So an inmate comes in and the inmate would say, well, I've got a drug and alcohol problem, or I need to – you know, I don't have any job skills. And so they would try to just go with whatever the inmate might say he or she needs. And then the person would just get in a line of inmates and wait for an opening in that kind of program. Now, every inmate who comes to prison gets a thorough assessment where we, you know, use a scientific approach to determine criminogenic need. And without that that information, it's really hard to use your dollars efficiently. And so when we when the economy tanked, and which is about the same time I took over, and we had to cut rehabilitation so drastically, one of the things we did is we said, all right, if we have to make these cuts, let's cut the programs that don't work. Unfortunately, we also had to cut into the meat. And so we cut educators and, you know, academic educators and drug and alcohol programs. And, you know, our only hope, the only good part of it was the idea that we would have a sound platform upon which to build should the economy ever turn around and the dollars ever come back.
But still, the R was put back, but then there really wasn't – it wasn't backed up.
No, absolutely it hasn't been. You know, we've done the academic work. We've put in assessments. We've done all these foundational things, which are important. But every year we still cut rehabilitation dollars. But, you know, how did I – how would I look at Secretary Dooley or Secretary Belcher from Health and Human Services before when they're cutting services to the blind and disabled, when we're cutting foster care programs, when the poorest of the poor aren't receiving, you know, kind of foundational support, the prisons had to cut as well. And you can only cut security so much. And really the only discretion we have is with rehabilitation, and that's what happened.
That must have been tough.
Yeah, it's the biggest disappointment of my time as a secretary because, you know, you're on the ground. You can see what the need is. You know, for example, that if you can teach someone a viable trade, that the recidivism rate goes down 12%. I can do the math, and I know that's for each individual, that's maybe 10 crimes they won't commit on the outside, so it quickly translates into fewer victims. It translates into changed lives. There's now a man or woman who can support his or her family with a living wage. The ripple effects of one changed life are enormous, and to watch those opportunities wasted is very difficult.
That's Matthew Cate, Secretary of the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. He's speaking with KALW's Nancy Mullane. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Holly Kernan. And now let's return to the interview with Matthew Cate, speaking with KALW's Nancy Mullane.
If you look back at the last 40 years of California sentencing policy, and you begin with life sentences that were anyone who did a felony prior to 1976 did a life term, meaning they had to go before the parole board, they had to show rehabilitation or change to get out of prison. Then in 1976, Governor Jerry Brown, then in his first term, signed the determinant sentencing law, which said you are given a – basically the courts have rubrics. You know, if you do rape, you get 2 years for your first offense, three, whatever. So everyone had a determined sentence. The day they went into prison, they knew the day they were going to get out. So the focus changed from trying to rehabilitate prisoners to punishing them, basically send them to prison, do their time, and get out. I'm kind of curious, now that it's been almost 40 years later, we now have a determinant sentencing policy that results in about a 70%, 65% to, it's gone up as high as 77% recidivism rate. What are we doing right now to address determinant sentencing 40 years later?
Well, the biggest change, of course, in the last year has been public safety realignment. And people haven't talked about it this way very much, but in essence, what public safety realignment does is it says, all right, if you're a serious offender, a violent offender, a sex offender, you're still going to get a long determinate sentence, and you're going to serve that time in the prison system. You may earn some credits along the way to get out, maybe 15% credits, but not very many. You're going to serve a long period of time. If you're a non-serious, non-violent offender, say a drug offender or a property crime offender, well, you're not going to come to prison in the first place. You're now going to serve your time in the county jail. Realignment, I think, you know, puts most of the discretion back in dealing with low-level offenders, and we still have very little discretion and very long sentences for high-level offenders. And I think that's probably a pretty good thing.
But that means that if someone does a serious or violent felony, and they are given – and it's not murder because that's an indeterminate life sentence.
Right.
But if they're doing serious and violent felonies and they're sent to prison, that means we still have this population in California that is going to be let out of prison before they've done – before they've even been asked to do any kind of rehabilitation.
Well, yes and no. My experience has been that – for those who commit serious crimes, not the murderer, but the person who has the multiple strong-arm robberies or rapes, those kinds of offenses, what I see is that they commit those offenses typically between the ages of 18 and 30. And then they serve 10 or 15 years. Well, by the time you've reached age 40, you've really aged out of your criminality. Over and over again, we see that people just don't commit very many crimes as they get to those ages, and they typically are tired of the lifestyle and now are willing to take on rehabilitative programs themselves. So they become self-motivated towards change. I won't argue that it might be good to give them the additional incentive of a parole date, an earlier parole date, to try to incentivize that change. But I just don't think we're ready for that as a society. And I'm not sure we're very good at deciding who's ready and who's not and for those intermediate guys that have served, is 5 years enough, is 10 years enough. And when I talk to victims, they want certainty when it comes to people who have committed those kinds of violent crimes against them. The idea that we're going to wait until this person, convinces a parole board, I use air quotes, because, some of these people are pretty manipulative, and so it's dangerous.
I know you said at the beginning of the conversation that you consider yourself a conservative on crime and crime and punishment, and yet you've also had a bit of a change of heart as you've become head of the CDCR. How do you feel about the death penalty on the ballot in November? Where do you stand on that?
Well, it's funny. I stand with the governor in that, the administration has made the decision that we're going to enforce the law. And so as the Secretary of Corrections, we'll do everything that we can do to enforce it. I can tell you on a personal level, I have some frustration. I was a death penalty appellate prosecutor. And so I had several death penalty cases that I was responsible for taking from verdict through to execution through the appellate process. And I didn't make much ground. during the 8 years I was at the Attorney General's office in that regard, because our system is very slow, very deliberate. The Ninth Circuit is going to cast a very wary eye on each one of those cases and make sure that there was no mistake along the way, certainly. And so, you know, as a private citizen, I have some concerns about the amount of money we spend on a system that doesn't do what it purports to do. And, you know, my view as a prosecutor had always been, well, we need to do more to change the system. But the courts are the courts, and federal judges are appointed for life, and they're going to make the decisions they make. We, as the Secretary of Corrections, I can certainly see a lot of ways to spend those dollars other than on attorneys. We can spend them on drug and alcohol programs. We can spend them on we have some great programs that reunite mothers and infants. You know, there's programs involving reuniting fathers and sons. We know that the recidivism, the rate at which African-American young man who has a father in prison, there's a 70% chance that young man's going to end up in the same place. And that's heartbreaking, unacceptable. And so, you know, I guess there's a lot of ways I think we should be spending our money.
So if it passes, you won't be disappointed?
I admit I'm torn. As someone who practiced in this field, I'm disappointed that the system broke down in the way that it did. As a practitioner in the correctional system, knowing all the money and time and effort that we spend on it, I won't be disappointed in that way.